We'll bring you the June 5th, 2009 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the Rain Report. I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN. This week, we'll conclude our three excerpts from the 2009 Dayton Hamvention FCC Forum. Here are some of the highlights from the Q&A session. Questions were fielded by William Cross, W3TN, employed in the Mobility Division of the FCC's Wireless Communications Bureau, and Laura Smith, FCC Special Counsel for Amateur Enforcement.
I'm Tim McGee, WB2KAO from Rochester, New York. As we know, we no longer have an advanced class license. However, the advanced class license holder does have band segments that they earned with that license. In my experience, I found the advanced class examination to be harder than the extra. Why don't we grandfather the advanced class license holders to extra class?
This is a question that has come up many times before, and it's an area that the commission has wrestled with. Where the commission came out on it was that grandfathering of people to a higher class license would be unfair to those that have qualified for that license. The advanced class license has not been issued in a number of years. Many people did find that to be a more difficult exam at the time. Since then, the question pools have been revised, new questions have been added, there have been changes to the extra class pools involving the technology, kinds of communications that are used. There are certainly the exams cover regulations, and those have changed a little bit too. Grandfathering someone to a higher class basically says you're exempt from the examination. So what we would really be saying is the examination you may have passed 10, 15, 20 years ago is okay for the higher class privileges. And then the question is, well, why isn't it okay for everyone else? Where the commission has come out on it is that if you're an advanced class licensee passing a 50-question exam, I believe it's 50 questions, on the amateur extra class privileges is a reasonable examination for the additional privileges that you get. With the study guides, the materials, the online testing that's available, it's not difficult to prepare for it. As a personal matter for you, it's probably not a bad idea to do a refresher course. You may have passed your advanced class exam in the 60s or in the 70s, and since then you've had no contact with the examination system. There's certainly no movement on that part, on the commission's part, to grandfather people, and actually looking at the number of advanced class licensees, it's been going down quite significantly because people are upgrading to extra class exams.
I'm Dave Proper, K2DP from St. Louis, Missouri, and my question is involving enforcement where the offending station is outside the limits of the United States, yet interferes with the communications ongoing within the United States. What type of cooperation can we address perhaps with Canada, Mexico, some areas of South America? And this is not just 14275. When the conditions come back, 10 meters will be suffering from the same thing.
What happens is if you have a complaint regarding the operation of a station by a foreign national, you let me know. And then what I do is I give you the contact information for my counterpart in whatever agency that is. You file your complaint with both me and that person so that we both understand that the complaint is pending. We do have fairly good relationships with all of the counterparts that do this type of work in other countries. So there is a dialogue. Whether or not they're successful, I mean, obviously our jurisdiction is limited to U.S. licensees.
Neil Ormos, N9NL. Could you tell me how much internal review is required before a notice of apparent liability is issued?
A warning letter comes directly from me with review by the other legal advisors, generally speaking. A notice of apparent liability goes through a bureau review. It means I will send it from me to, if I'm doing it. Now, if it's being done by the field, I think the same thing happens, and Jim can confirm this, but I will draft it up, send it to my supervisor, which is Mike Moffitt, who's the regional director, and then Mike will approve, if he approves of the substance of it, and send it through the Bureau for review. And that will go through the Bureau legal advisor and then the Bureau chief, Chris Monteith, and then out the door. It doesn't go past the Bureau chief, though.
My name is Jim Anselmo, WB8NNJ, also the officer of the Silo Valley Amateur Radio Club, one of the five officers. We had a amateur move in from California. We're in southern Ohio. About a month ago, and started, we sponsor five machines. And we started getting complaints after about 2 days of profanity, talking about sexual prowess. We actually got an OO. Our control operators weren't taking him off. So we sent him a registered letter explaining to him that we no longer welcomed his activities on our machines. He is screaming bloody murder that we didn't have the right to do that, and we can't deny him the use of the machine. What are our options?
Obviously, as a control operator and the trustee, you have a responsibility to maintain the integrity of your repeater. You also have the right, if you wish, to tell people they cannot use it. If you tell him that in writing, you've satisfied your obligation.
We sent him a register letter. We do have the copy back, but he's really griping.
We'd be happy to file it with the commission, and we can take a look at it. But realistically, if you have told him not to use it, it's your repeater.
Actually, that's an interesting question, and it comes up quite frequently with repeaters. When the repeater rules were written many years ago, one of the things the commission was asked to do was to specifically put in the rules authority to limit stations to using the repeater. And in section 97205, where we have the rules on repeaters, it says limiting the repeaters to certain users is allowed. That certainly is a way that you can control a repeater, and it doesn't matter what the station is, the licensee is responsible for it. So whoever, it's either the club trustee or if it's an individual that has the license on the repeater, we certainly can contact them because of what's going on with one of the users. We can also contact the user. But you do have an absolute obligation to control that machine. And if it means limiting the use to certain users, the commission rules provide for that. I'm not surprised, particularly when someone gets a notice that says, we don't want you to use the machine anymore. They may not be too happy. One of the common misunderstandings is that amateur repeaters are not common carrier systems. There is no duty to serve on a non-discriminatory basis. If you want to limit it to people in the DX club, that's fine. If you want to limit it to rush hour messages are going to be traffic related or the mobiles get priority, that's fine. You all put the repeater up. It's yours to run and your obligation to control it. And limiting it is allowed. If the guy continues, I'm not sure what you're going to do it other than maybe turning off the repeater or knocking down a remote receive site if he's coming in that way or something, but the licensee has to control that machine.
You're listening to highlights from the Q&A session from the 2009 FCC forum held at the Dayton Hamvention this past May. We'll conclude these highlights in a moment. This is the Rain Report. Just a call away from your PDA or cell phone at 773-358-7845. Thanks to Uddle Systems. That's 773-358-7845. We'll be right back. This is the Rain Report.
Ed Collins, N8NUY. I'm a senior trustee for the Dayton Club here. We are trying to formulate rules for the D-Star digital repeater we're putting in. This is going to have 128 kilobaud access to the internet. Has the commission started any thought into what the limitations would be of internet over amateur radio, content of the internet we can transmit, etc.?
No, you're putting up the system. There's no special rules that apply to repeaters. It's the standard rules of the state, standard rules that apply in Part 97. If you're providing internet access, you're generally getting into the area of third-party communications. If it's coming in as voice over internet protocol, it's a third-party issue. The rules in 97.119 apply to that. But we're not going to have rules for systems. We never have. We have the rules for the station and the station licensee will have to make sure that the system is designed, the station is operating as any station should. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's a repeater or your own station at home, it's a station. You got to follow the rules. If you have something that the rules are out of date, they're not serving your purposes, tell us. We'll put it out for comment. If we need special rules for data communications being used over internet coming through repeaters, hopefully you all know what you want, because that's how the rulemaking process works. You ask us for a change of a rule, you tell us what you want the rule to be, we put out for comment, we get back lots of comments, and hopefully there's some kind of consensus of agreement as to what you want. Because remember, these are your frequencies. They aren't ours. When we're talking to the field offices and we're talking to other government agencies and we're laughing about the stupid stuff some of you do, It isn't on the ham bands. It's on government bands. If this is a thing about some particular technology or some kind of encryption or accommodation or something you need, the petition for rulemaking process is the way to handle that. So everyone has input and everyone can say, yeah, this is how we want our frequencies used.
I'm Rich Gelber, K2WR from New York City. As I'm sure many have told you, you've got a tough act to follow. And if you've gone over the recent and maybe not so recent enforcement cases with your esteemed predecessor, you're familiar with enforcement cases regarding certain truck stops and other establishments selling 11-meter radios that turn out to be 10-meter radios. My recollection is that the most prominent case was settled with a consent order and a fine. To your knowledge, are these people generally in compliance now? And if we happen randomly to find that they're not, do you want to hear about it?
Well, first let me talk to your references to Riley. Riley and I are actually in regular contact. So I do hear from him quite often. He comes by. He lives less than 5 minutes from the office. He comes by and we chat. If I get a call from somebody and I look him up and I have a 6-inch file, I call him and say, Riley, come here and tell me about this guy. And he does. He left me an entire wall of files, by the way, not just one or two. There's actually a wall of files. We had 10 years in the job, so there are quite a number of files. I have the opportunity to look people up, both complainants and subjects, by the way, when people come in to make sure that the complaints are legitimate. With respect to the CVs, yes, I do have a file on that one. It is in my files. We do get a lot of complaints about the equipment, and we do want to hear about it. The problem is, it's very labor-intensive to go out and to investigate these things from the commission standpoint. And to be honest with you, we only have a limited number of resources. That's right. You did put your arms out and save the amateur community, and that is correct. We do get a lot of information and a lot of assistance from the amateurs. The field agents will tell you that they appreciate all the hard work that the amateurs put into helping them on these types of cases. Please do let us know. Please don't be offended if we have to pick and choose the serious bad actors from among these people, simply because there are so many of them that, to be quite honest, I could write fines 24 hours a day when it comes to that kind of stuff and still not get them all done. So we will pick the worst of the bad actors to go after, but please do let us know.
I had told Laura one of the unique things about Dayton is you have an opportunity to see no evil, hear no evil, and be with evil. Okay. Our last question, the gentleman here.
Mark, we've been accused of being. I read in a ham magazine that you were considering getting a ham license at some point. Just wondered what your plans are for that.
Sure. Actually, that allows me to introduce another member of my family, which a lot of people have now learned about. My father-in-law is Richard Smith. He's the former chief of the Field Operations Bureau. The Field Operations Bureau is the precursor to the Enforcement Bureau. So in my family, not only do I have a cop on one side, but I have an FCC cop, if you will, on the other side. When Dick started his career at the FCC, he worked in the LA field office as an engineer. One of the duties that he had while he was out there was to administer the amateur radio test. His expertise just so happened to be in the code. He is an incredible operator. And so when I decided to take this job, I did not want to run out and get my license before I took the job for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is I felt it would be a sham. I wasn't an amateur before I took the job. I didn't want you to think that I was selling you so short that I was going to run out and get my license to try and validate myself for this industry. Instead, I said, well, I would wait and take the exam later and become an amateur as I got to know the community. By the way, I'm not so sure I want to be part of the community anymore. But in any event, when I told the story to Dick and said, I was thinking about getting my license, he said to me, you will not get your license until you can pass the code part of the test. And fortunately, he followed that up with a caveat, which was, and I will be there to oversee the administration of this to determine whether or not you're competent and qualified to be an amateur. So I have to learn code. I obviously do not know it. Dick is going to begin teaching me and my six-year-old code this summer. We're anticipating she will be much further along than I by the end of the summer. But as soon as I do get competent in it, and as soon as I can get Dick to come, the two of us will come. And I've challenged him to retake the test. He gave up his license when he became the chief of the Field Operations Bureau. So we'll see which one of us passes and which one of us fails.
You've been listening to some highlights from the 2009 Dayton Hamvention FCC Forum held this past May. The Q&As were fielded by Laura Smith, FCC Special Counsel for Amateur Enforcement, and William Cross, W3TN, employed in the Mobility Division of the FCC's Wireless Communications Bureau. The first two excerpts from this forum will be found on the archive page on therainreport.com. Now for Rain's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.